Welcome to Mobility Now, the podcast that looks at mobility technology sitting at the edge of today but the center of tomorrow. I'm your host, Amit Mehta, Head of Innovation at Silicon Valley Lab, an advanced research division of North American Lighting, a subsidiary of the COTA Group, the world's leading tier one supplier of exterior automotive lighting.
And I'm your co-host, Dan Davies, Innovation Manager at Silicon Valley Lab. Autonomous vehicles and other mobility technologies have the potential to reduce road fatalities and reduce congestion and change the way we experience traveling. Mobility Now interviews key players from startups and industry leaders developing these mobility technologies.
Mobility Now is for people new to the industry, students wanting to enter the industry, and others in the industry that would like to keep up on trends surrounding mobility. Now, Dan, I know I always pick on you for living in San Francisco, and I'm going to do it again this time.
Yeah.
So I want to tell you a little bit about my experience in San Francisco. I was in San Francisco, and I stayed downtown. I had a conference, I think, last year. And okay. I was on the sixth floor of the Courtyard Marriott.
Oh, yeah, I know it.
Yep. And I remember trying to sleep at midnight. And it was so annoying.
Couldn't do it.
I heard fire trucks. I heard ambulances. I heard all kinds of vehicles that I really didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to live in the city that is like San Francisco, or I consider probably New York or Chicago or LA have the same ordeal. But hearing those sounds at that time of night, it really turned me off.
Yeah.
So, Dan, I want to know, because you live in the city, you live in a nice area of the city, and living in the city must be really difficult for you. You probably have an abundance of noises, such as motorcycles, ambulances, fire trucks, and others. How do you cope with these noises, and how do you sleep at night?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's one of the tough parts of living in the city, especially for newcomers. You know, you do get used to it after a while, but it's something that's always there. I live about a block, two blocks away from a local fire station. Mm-hmm. And so I get fire trucks all the time. Of course, patrol cars, ambulances, they're a regular occurrence. Usually I don't mind it, but you know, at nighttime, Sunday mornings, they can wake you up. They can be something to get used to.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about this a little while ago, you know, because now we're doing a lot of Zoom meetings, and sometimes these sounds will ruin my Zoom meetings as they drive by my house.
Right.
But they're actually a necessary evil, right? You need these sounds because when you're driving and you're walking around the city, you can only look in one direction.
Need these sounds, Dan. I mean, I don't need them at 2 a.m.
Yeah, well, not at 2 a.m. maybe, unless you're walking around at 2 a.m. But, you know, when you're driving and walking, you can only look in one direction. But sounds from the environment come from all directions. So they can help you be aware of where the vehicles are around you. Especially me, sometimes I'm wearing headphones when I'm walking around. So I need loud noises to alert me to ambulances that might be coming up from behind. I can't see them. And when you're driving too, right, you're looking forward, but you can't see vehicles and ambulances to the side or behind you. So you need these sounds to be safe when you're driving around, especially in a city where there's lots of players on the roads. So, I think our ability to recognize what sounds are around us, not just ambulances and fire trucks, right? It's also it's also motorcycles and cars, because each of these vehicles behaves differently. They run at different speeds. They might be trying to overtake you. A motorcycle especially might be trying to get around you.
Mm-hmm.
So that sound alerts you to be careful. Check your side mirrors. Check your rear view mirror. Find out where that motorcycle is.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, we have this really great ability to recognize sounds just from what we hear. We can tell what it is, and we can locate it too. We can, okay, this is behind me, this is to my right, and then we can look and use our eyes to get confirmation. So I was thinking how this applies to autonomous driving, right? We talk a lot about sensors, cameras, and LiDAR, and different devices to help autonomous vehicles see. But hearing is an important part of driving too. Right. And I think it'll be just as important for autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I feel for you living in the city, but I'm glad you brought that up today, because I remember when I first got here in 2017, one of the first people I met was a gentleman named Nalin Balan. And he is he was at that point part of the business development team, and he still is for Reality AI. And through him, I met the CEO, Stuart. And quite an amazing company with amazing growth. And that's who our guest is today. So I'd like to welcome Stuart Pfeffer to our mobility podcast. How are you doing, Stuart?
Hey, how you doing? Good to talk to you, Amit. Dan?
Yeah, we're excited to have you here, and we feel you have a lot of insight that I think our audience will enjoy regarding mobility. So, you know, I just want to get straight into it, and I'd like to learn about your amazing background in asset management and finance. How did you go from that, and how did you end up in AI?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe before getting into that, let me just say a couple of words about how you began the podcast. And that is, we're talking about the sound around you, because we see a tremendous opportunity in making use of sound in all kinds of contexts. When you drive, of course, as you said, you don't just see what's going on around you. You hear, is there an ambulance coming from behind? You hear if there's somebody honking at you from the right. If it's snowy or windy or raining, you hear that as well. It's all important information which can supplement the sense of sight. And you know, that's where we live at Reality AI. We live in that intersection between signal processing and AI, where we're using the properties of sound, and in other contexts, vibration or other kinds of waveforms like that, to pull out some of that rich information that exists in the ambient sound and motion around us.
That's a great context and great to know. I think you've answered our question. As we get deeper into this podcast, I think we're going to learn a lot more about how we can use that sound even further as we advance into ADAS and mobility. So I'd like to circle back to the first question I had is, I want to learn a little about yourself and how you went from asset management and finance into AI.
Yeah. So as you say, I come from a very different world. My world is the world of Wall Street, basically. I spent most of my career in New York City working with banks and securities firms and investment managers and that type of thing. And I built a financial technology company that we ultimately sold to Wells Fargo. Wow. And I got into this entirely by accident. An old friend of mine, a guy named Jeff, who is the other co-founder of Reality AI and the guy who actually invented this technology, pulled me in. So Jeff is a PhD in applied math and scientific computing, whose area of specialty is the field of harmonic analysis, which is also the fundamental mathematics behind signal processing. And Jeff is one of my oldest best friends. I've known him since we were 13 years old. I mean, he was at my bar mitzvah and both of my weddings.
Wow.
That's how long I've known this guy. And you know, we, of course, after graduating from high school together, we went down different paths. He became a scientist. I wound up working in the financial world. And, you know, after graduate school for him, he started a medical device company as a technical co-founder that got sold to Medtronic, and then spent the next 10, 12 years doing contract research and development for US government customers in the military and intelligence community, all in this emerging area of applying the new field of machine learning to very complex problems in signal recognition, usually with a view towards some kind of surveillance or target acquisition application. And right after we sold the company to Wells Fargo, well, I had to continue to work there for a few years, and that was fine. But when my contract with the bank was up, I was really ready to not be working for a bank. And about that time, Jeff said to me, "Hey, you know, some of the stuff I've been telling you about, I think it's time to get it out of the lab and into a product. But I'm a mathematician. I don't know how to write a business plan. I'm thinking maybe you do." And so that's sort of where all this began, with me trying to help out a buddy to write a business plan for this new technology. And the more we worked on it, the more it felt like, hey, you know what? I think this is really interesting, and I think I know what to do with it from a business point of view. And that's really where it all came from.
Very impressive. Wow, that's really cool that you sold an app to Wells Fargo. I think that's a really huge win. But great. So you started Reality AI with your friend Jeff, And can you tell me a little bit about what you do? I read on your website about explainable AI at the edge. And that sounds really cool. Can you tell us a little more about it?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, basically what we're doing is we're taking some of the techniques that Jeff developed in that earlier work and now applying it to all kinds of commercial use cases. Now, the approach to machine learning that we use is grounded in this fundamental mathematics of signal processing. And our approach is essentially to take the inputs that we get, which in all cases are some form of waveform. We don't really work with images. We don't work with video. We don't work with text. We work with sound and vibration and waveforms, signals, right? Mm-hmm. And the first thing our technique does is we try and break that down in terms of fundamental signal processing transforms. An AI guy would describe this as feature discovery or feature engineering, trying to figure out what combinations of time and frequency computations best identify the signature of whatever it is we're looking for in that data. And then we can train and tune a machine learning model to make the best use of those optimized features.
Okay, so features are like kind of the pitch of the sound, or maybe what sort of thing?
Yeah, well, that's one example, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess this is an example Jeff uses that I kind of like, and that is to say, let's say I'm trying to build a detector for when my wife has come home. Okay. So I'm going to like take a whole bunch of sensors, and I'm going to aim at the door, or, you know, wire up the door, and I've got all these sensors producing all these numbers, right? And I got to figure out what combination of those numbers means that she's home. Now, there's not going to be any one number that comes out of those sensors that do it, so I got to do some kind of computations. And some of those things are going to be more, you know, they're going to have some kind of correlation to her being home versus it being something else like the dog or my kids or something else, right? Those computations, the results of those computations are the features. They're the things that we're going to use as the input to a learning model. And they come before the model. So, you know, what's the ideal feature for a my wife is home detector? Well, that would be some combination of calculations that result in a one when it's her and a zero when it's not. Right? If I could do that computation directly from the data, that's the perfect feature. It's fully predictive, 100% accurate. And I don't even need a machine learning model now. Now all I need is an if-then statement, right? That's my wife. That's the ideal feature, right?
It's a definite yes or a definite no.
Perfect, right? But the real world, you don't really get things that are that perfect.
Right.
So what's required is a lot of engineering work to figure out what combinations of those features are going to be most tightly correlated to her being home. One of the big successes of deep learning has been to use neural networks to do that feature discovery. And, you know, deep learning has been terrifically successful in doing that, using layer upon layer of neural network to figure out what matters. Our approach is different. We use the signal processing math for a narrower range of use cases. But it has the advantage of being, number one, explainable, because I can reduce everything to talking about what combinations of time and frequency are the most important. And number two, just really, really compact, computationally efficient, so that we can fit the program that does the detection into really small, really inexpensive processors. And that helps our customers meet a price point or a power consumption constraint or a size and weight constraint. So it's got this approach has a bunch of advantages. And when we talk about explainable AI at the edge, the explainable part means engineers generally understand time and frequency, and we can describe what's happening in terms of time and frequency. And the edge part refers to being able to fit on that really small chip, like the kind of chip you'd find in a typical automotive component.
Oh, cool.
That's really amazing. And I think the way you've described your technology, I feel it's ahead of its time. And that brings me to my next question is, you've won a couple awards recently. One was the Tech Innovator in Edge AI by Gartner and 2020 Future Mobility Award in AI for Safety. What makes your technology really award winning?
Well, you know, I think what these really reflect is the fact that we're just coming at this from a different angle, right? So much of the machine learning world, particularly when it comes to sensing, is built on vision. Right. I mean, I think at the top of the podcast, you guys mentioned you spend a lot of time looking at and talking about LIDAR and cameras and radar and, you know, all these kinds of things, right? Which are great because they're super powerful, right? You could not drive a car with sound alone, right? You need those things, but they have limitations, like primarily being they're limited to line of sight. LIDAR, cameras, radar can't see what they can't see. If it's obscured by a corner or around a bend, or it's an emergency vehicle a kilometer and a half away, you have no opportunity to recognize it visually. So we come about it using sound. Anybody who's driven with the window open knows if you're coming up on a blind intersection and there's something coming around that corner, there's a good chance you can hear it. And the whole point of sirens, of course, is that you can hear them at a distance. So by using sound to supplement vision, we give cars the ability to see around corners. Or hear around corners, really, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Great. So that's a huge advantage, right? Because now we have a sensor that doesn't require line of sight to your target object. So it really expands your detection range, especially in an urban city like San Francisco, right? Where there's lots of obstacles, trees, buildings.
Yeah. Buildings. Yeah. I mean, you know, sound has its own challenges, of course. Mm-hmm. One of them being that crowded sound environments can be difficult to disentangle targets, right? So, you know, in a busy urban environment like San Francisco, where there's a lot of people on the street and cars coming and going around you all the time, our thought is actually being able to hear that there's a car nearby is less helpful because you can see that there's cars everywhere, right? And knowing specifically where each car is and all that's more important in those cases. However, the fact that there is an ambulance coming from the right that you do not have an opportunity yet to see, that can be very important contextual information. Yes. In the city of San Francisco. On the other hand, if you are driving at night through a neighborhood where it's, you know, very narrow streets, alleys, blind intersections, mm-hmm. the ability to hear what's happening around those corners is very important and really can't be addressed by line of sight sensors. So, you know, it's a safety issue for that autonomous taxi or that autonomous delivery car, or heck, even for a human driver who is working their way through a tight environment and can't see what's happening around the corner. So, you know, these are edge cases, perhaps. They're not the main problem of keeping your car in the proper lane and avoiding obstacles on the road. But nevertheless, they are important safety problems. And, you know, I note that some of the safety regulators and standards bodies like Euro NCAP, for instance, mm-hmm. are now beginning to introduce obstructed view test scenarios into their testing. So, you know, you got to figure out, you know, how the ability to hear that bicycle is coming from behind that obstacle before you see it gives you that much more opportunity to brake and avoid the collision.
Right. Okay, well, that sounds like a really great opportunity if Euro NCAP is now adding non-line of sight detection as part of their testing. I think that creates a huge business case now for automotive manufacturers to include this kind of sensor in their vehicles. So yeah. I wanted to ask a little bit more about that. If you could talk about some of the business opportunity that you see with this kind of sensing and this explainable AI.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you know, I've been talking about this car seeing around corners with sound thing. That's not our only use case at all, mm-hmm. But it's certainly the one that's got the most attention recently, particularly in mobility. But we are also working with customers of ours in the among the tier ones to use sound to detect weather conditions. Are you driving on wet pavement? Are you driving on sandy or gravelly pavement? Are you traveling on ice or snow? You know, we can hear all of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another category of thing that that we've been working on. And then finally, adding predictive maintenance to components. So, you know, in our autonomous future, there isn't going to be anybody behind the wheel listening for that squeak or that shimmy that today is a driver's indication that something might be wrong and you might need to get your car looked at. So every component on the vehicle, bumper to bumper, is going to need to incorporate some degree of smarts to figure out if there is a current problem or is there one about to develop. One of our customers who makes door assemblies, for example, was telling us that, hey, you know, if your autonomous taxi, the door can't close properly, that autonomous taxi is 100% out of commission until it gets fixed. Or it's driving around with a safety problem. So that means we got to be making smart doors.
Right. So right? Cars listen to themselves as well.
Right. Yeah.
Lester, I think you gave us a lot there. And what I know from working with Reality AI, because we've had the opportunity to work together, is it's been an absolute pleasure in the past. And your company always delivers what it promises. So my real next question is, what's next for Reality AI?
Yeah, well, so, you know, what we're really spending a lot of time on now is evangelizing Edge AI. And this approach to AI. You know, this is, we're in an industry where engineers have not, other than in the autonomous world, haven't really used machine learning for much, if anything. And the engineering departments in the automotive tier one and tier twos, in the OEMs, in our customers in industrial products, you know, it's this is new. And they need to get their heads around how is machine learning different than traditional engineering methods, right? Because we're not here trying to predict the next thing you're going to put in your shopping cart. We're, you know, looking at the function of machines and whose function has safety ramifications. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a pretty high bar for understanding how this works before anything can get deployed. And so for us, I think that's really the next big challenge in making a bigger market for this is getting engineers to understand how this works, why it can be trusted, what is it, what explainability means, and how to deploy it effectively.
I'd like to ask one question on top of that before you move on is, yeah. How did you realize that these engineers were, how did you realize that you wanted to become an evangelist for this and engineers around that didn't really understand how to use your technology yet? And have you developed tools to help them understand how to use your technology?
Yeah, well, I mean, the tools part, that's something we spend all day, every day doing. And, you know, our primary product is a piece of software called Reality AI Tools, which is in effect an engineering workstation for machine learning. You know, it became crystal clear to us in our early interactions with customers where, you know, engineers, we, first off, just overcoming the initial resistance to trying something new and difficult to understand. Because, hey, you know, for good reasons, engineers will not deploy something where they don't understand how it works, particularly in a safety critical application. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. For, you know, liability reasons, just for consumer protection reasons, right? You know, engineers need to know how this thing works, how it's going to behave, why they should trust it, what are its limits. And what we have invested a lot of time in the product in over the last year and a half in particular has been in adding the visualizations, the transparency, so that engineers can intelligently interrogate models and get answers to those questions. What is this thing actually doing? What is it basing its decisions on? How do I know how it works? How do I know I can trust it? And you know, that's come directly from working with customers on trying to solve problems and get the organization to implement the solutions.
Yeah, very cool. You know, I've actually used that tool that you have online. I was given an account to play around with, and it was really a lot of fun to use. It's not like anything I've ever used before. The thing that really caught my attention is, like you were saying, the feature detection. When you put your sound data into the platform and have it run its analysis, it'll tell you what aspects of all these, I guess, hundreds of different aspects that the machine looks for, which ones are related to the what you're looking for. So you were talking about weather condition detection. You know, if the tire hitting the road sounds kind of splashy, then that's an indicator of what percent, you know, what weight does it have, that this is an indication that the road is wet. Sure. And it's kind of the same way I think that humans detect and identify sounds. I was talking about the motorcycle sound. Everybody knows that a motorcycle coming up behind you has this distinct sound that's different from other vehicles. And so it sounds like your explainable AI is kind of mimicking the same thing that we do in our brains when we listen to sounds to try to identify what it is.
Yeah, except we're not using a neurological model the way a deep learning approach would. But you're right in that what we are doing is mathematically disentangling that distinctive roar of the motorcycle, right? Because how that manifests itself mathematically is a different set of frequencies. You've got that sort of low rumble that you don't necessarily have with a car, right? And the pattern by which the volume increases and declines. And that type of thing, but it's a mathematical description of it. Another customer makes working on a smart tire, right? You have a tire going down the road, and if that tire is not inflated, well, it's going to sound a little different, and it's going to sound a little different in that you're going to hear it, that sort of higher pitched sound of the deflated tire rolling, and then there's also going to be a little womp 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 kind of thing happening there. And all of that is describable in terms of frequency patterns, that hiss, and the time pattern, that womp 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 kind of thing. So what we use is this signal processing mathematics to describe the frequencies, the periodicity of the change in frequencies, and all that kind of stuff. And that can be visualized in graphs and in charts and, you know, in numbers for an engineer to look at to say, oh, okay, I see now when we see this particular wobble with this periodicity in those key frequencies, that means the tire is not inflated. That makes sense to me because from what I know about the physics of tires, I can relate that to how my thing is actually working. And the challenge with other approaches to AI, particularly the deep learning kind of approach that does in fact try to mimic the way your brain sees, is that you don't get that clear explainability. You have to resort to extra models which try to predict how the AI is going to work, or you have to audit the pathways through the neural network models, or, you know, there's a variety of approaches, but nothing anywhere so directly as saying, okay, here is the signature of the thing we're looking for. This is when you see this signature in time and frequency, that you know that this is happening. Mm-hmm. And, I'm not trying to detract from deep learning and the deep learning approach. It's very, very successful. But if you're in an engineering application that is safety critical, and you must know exactly on what basis your product is making its decisions, well, we have an alternative that is a better fit. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. It sounds like you're working on something that's really new and in an industry that has amazing potential going forward. It looks like this is something a lot of people are going to be working on over the next decade or so. And I think a lot of people are looking at how AI can be used in the automotive industry. So you being an expert and having a lot of experience with getting started with your own startup and being very successful, can you share any advice on people who are just starting out and want to get into the field of AI for automotive?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, first thing, of course, is you got to learn the fundamentals, right? I mean, that kind of goes without saying. And some people want to be coders and data scientists. I will say that where I see the biggest gap, frankly, is not on the algorithm side. Where I think, where I predict companies are going to need the most help is in managing data collection. Because data, collecting data for these kinds of applications, it is definitely the part of the effort that costs the most and takes the longest. And it requires sort of a different way of thinking about it than the traditional engineering approach, right? I know what we see all the time is that our customers are, when they first try to, you know, do their first version of their data collection plans, which they will sometimes send to us and say, hey, what do you think? You know, they assume that the algorithm is going to think like a human being does. That is, you know, things that are perfectly obvious to a human being that, well, I know that, I'll give you an example, right? We had a customer working on an application on an assembly line, and they're using sound to inspect the component as it comes off the assembly line. And in some cases, there's a worker who's standing there talking to another colleague, not kind of near enough to the microphone that we're picking it up in the background.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in other recordings, he's not there. But it just so happens to be that in a couple of critical cases where we're actually finding the defect that we want to be able to detect occurs, the guy is there in the background. So what does the algorithm learn? The algorithm learns that if there's a guy talking, it's probably a defective part.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you need to design your data collection plan around eliminating through repetition, right? You get as many opportunities as possible. Then the algorithm can learn that chatter in the background is actually irrelevant, right? But if it only has a few cases, that's what it's going to focus on, the thing that is most obviously different.
Right. Because they're correlated in your small data set.
They're correlated in the small data set. Yeah, they happen to be purely by chance, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think as companies try to use these methods more often, and not just ours, by the way, but any machine learning method more often, they're going to need to be collecting a lot more data. And people who understand how to construct a data collection effort are going to be in very high demand. So that's that's my advice for someone who is starting out, wants to enter the field, and wants to know what's going to be the most valuable. And I'd say focus on the data and how to create it in the first place.
Great to know.
Thank you very much, Stuart. That was terrific. And I think our audience will learn a lot on reality AI and what they can offer. I really appreciate what you offered today. And stay tuned. Next month, we're going to have Nodar, who's using untethered long baseline stereo vision for autonomous vehicles. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoyed this episode.